Love a rugby league same game multi? Then you've got to check out Picklebet same game multi. Watch your odds and payouts skyrocket when you combine your favorite team's markets, like head-to-head, first try scorer, and winning margin. Picklebet, the next-gen betting app and official sponsor of the NRL All-Stars podcast.
What are you really gambling with?
For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
All that glitters is gold.
Only shooting stars break the mold.
Welcome to another episode of the NRL All-Stars podcast. Barnsy here for the first Talk and Footy episode of season 2024. Cannot wait to get stuck into the footy. For those that have been listening to the Supercoach episodes, thank you very much. This is our non-Supercoach episode, just talking footy with rotating guests that we get in to have a chat about footy. What's happening in footy now, what's been happening the last couple of rounds, all the big issues, and even a chat about players of the past and so forth. So good to be back for 2024. For this episode, we've got a guy that's been on a couple of times last year, and that is Timmy O from the SC Off the Bench. Timmy O, welcome back, mate. Good to have you on board to talk some footy.
Not a problem at all, Barnsy. Yeah, great to be here. It's our Supercoach Off the Bench podcast. We do it twice a week, and we've got five of us that are involved in the program. And yeah, mate, we love it. We just sit around and talk footy. It's great value.
SC Off the Bench, go and check it out. Very good show. Very enjoyable and very good for your Supercoach teams. But for this one, no Supercoach talk, guys and girls. It's just all about footy. Before we get into it, you would have heard the Picklebet ad just at the start of the podcast. If you do go and sign up, make sure that you use All-Stars as your affiliate code. That way you'll get some, well, they'll take great care of you because they'll see that you've come through from the podcast, and they've often got good offers and everything. And I tell you what, we've got the Panthers kicking off in a few hours, and I can't wait to get -10.5 on those Penrith Panthers to smash the Broncos. But Timmy's a Broncos fan, so I won't get into that anymore about Picklebet. Just jump on and enjoy it. Enjoy the money you'll win off the Penrith Panthers at those odds. But first of all, we got the round that was, and round three is upon us now. But round two, I'm going to say it was a bit of a mixed bag round. It was, for me, Tim, the first round was really good, and I think some of that is just having footy back and everything. But like, I went to the Star to do the Supercoach launch, which I really appreciated the invite for, from Sangster and the boys at the DT, and it was a fantastic day. Got to watch both games live from Vegas, and it was just a great launch to have that happen at the start of a footy season. And I felt that the footy was all really good quality, especially those Vegas games. They were really good games. So maybe it's a little bit round two coming down from that high of having the NRL back and everything. But we kicked off with Thursday night footy, and it is your Broncos, so I'm sure you're going to have a lot to say about it. But Jesus Christ, I have not seen a worse game than the Broncos and Rabbits for a while. Like, that was diabolical. The first half an hour in particular, neither of them could hold the ball. There was massive errors all over the place. It started to get slightly better, but that was only because the Broncos kicked in the gear and ran away with it. Like, Souths had 42 missed tackles, but between them, like, the Broncos had 15 errors and Souths had 14. And I dare say that 20 of those 29 errors were in the first half. It was just absolutely diabolical. The completion rates were pretty poor. Rabbits finished on 66%, Broncos 77%. But again, in the first half, it was half that for the first 20 minutes. Like, I just thought that it was two teams that I think we came into this season expecting a fair bit from. Obviously, the Broncos coming from last year's grand final, the Rabbits missing out on the eight, and a lot of us thinking they're going to make the eight. And what we got out of that game, I think, was it's two teams that might actually struggle a little bit early on at the moment.
Yeah, mate, look, it wasn't pretty. And being a long-term Broncos fan and 13, 14-year member, look, it was actually really hard to watch. You certainly could have been confused thinking that it was absolutely pouring down rain for the game because, mate, that first 20 minutes, half an hour was just putrid. It was as if the ball was just soaking wet, slippery. They couldn't hold on to it. Kicks were going out on the full. Everything just looked horrible. It looked like two teams from the bottom of the table, not two teams that were trying to push towards the top of the table. So And it just seemed to be everybody as well. It wasn't particular players. It just seemed to be everybody. Passes were going astray. No one could catch the ball. It was like an under-10s game. It looked shocking.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I don't even really know what either side was trying to do. Like, but even especially Souths, like the attacking sets that Souths had and just the structure that they had, it didn't look like it was ever going to work. And it looked like it was the first time that a brand new team played together. I mean, one of the shining lights, at least for the Broncos, because we've got to be a bit positive about the game. Cobbo had a pretty good game, and I'm pretty critical of him moving to centre, but he had a couple line breaks, a line break assist, a try assist, 8 tackle breaks as well. It was pretty tough to handle. He only missed the 2 tackles. He had a couple of errors himself, but, I mean, everybody did. So, I mean, I thought that he was pretty decent comparatively, and Walsh kicked into gear and did some Walsh things, which really helped him out. So, I don't think there's too many highlights from it. Did you watch that game and think, geez, this is just a bad game for us? Or were you actually worried for the Broncos from what you saw?
Oh, look, a little bit of both, I guess. I think the glimpses of positive stuff that came out of our back five shows that there's certainly enough potential there when they can string it together. I think Stags had a really good game as well. Obviously, there was a few drop balls early, but I think the key points for me were the one-on-one tackles dragging the opposition players out over the sideline, which happened 3 or 4 times during the game. So I think it's, although there was a lot of drop ball, there was a few signs of really good things in there as well that I think gives us something really positive to work on for the rest of the season. Look, obviously, Reece Walsh didn't have a fantastic game, although he scored a few points and things like that. But, look, I think as a side, they're just going to keep growing and getting better, or I certainly hope they do. It's going to be a big test for us tonight against the Panthers. Unfortunately, with Payne Haas and Adam Reynolds out, I've as much of a staunch Broncos supporter as I am, I think I've tipped Panthers 13+. So it's not some real good reading there. And not a lot of faith in the whole squad, but I think those two players in particular will make a big difference to us. I hope to God that's not how it ends up. But, I've got my concerns.
I got massive concerns on Souths more than anything. I have to say, like, Elias got dropped after this game, and he only made one error to be frank. His stats were, 2 missed tackles, 1 error. Yeah, that's pretty fine. Nothing really massively terrible about what he did. He just didn't really do much and was ineffective.
Do you think he's just been made a bit of a scapegoat, Barnsley?
A little bit. Like, I'm always kind of loath to label a dropping of an underperforming player a scapegoat. Like, I kind of don't like it because it's like, to me, I'm a bit old school in rugby league. Like, being dropped was never a big deal 20 years ago, and it's made a big deal now because we don't have a proper reserve grade. It's like everybody gets dropped. You know, you used to get Australian players dropped all the time 20 years ago. It used to, be pretty normal. So I'm always loath to say, oh, look, it's blaming everything on him. If somebody isn't playing well and they get dropped, and especially if they're young and they need to learn from it, like Sam Walker was a good example with the Roosters, it's not a big deal to me. The problem that I've got with it, though, is not necessarily him being dropped, but doing it so early when they've supported him so much. Like, I don't think dropping any half 2 games in is a great sign. So I found that a bit puzzling, but more so I don't like the lack of accountability, because it's like it's fine to blame Elias for some of it because he didn't really do much and he's just not made an impact the first 2 weeks. But Cody Walker's done nothing. And you talk about Elias not doing much but not making many mistakes. I tell you who made a lot of mistakes, Latrell Mitchell was awful. Like, he was absolutely horrid that night. And there wasn't much talk about that because he seems to be just impervious from this sort of negative talk about his performance. But look, he had at least 4 occasions defensively, which would get half the fullbacks in the league dropped just about. You know, he went into one kick where he let it bounce. He went into another kick where they ended up scoring a try off it because instead of attacking the ball, he just didn't want to put his body on the line with the defensive line coming in at him. And he just put a little tap on the foot with it, and it went back to the Broncos, obviously, for 6 again, and they scored. And he did this multiple times. He got burnt by Reece Walsh badly and just gave up 20 metres out from even chasing him. There were so many different mistakes that he made defensively, and his attitude and body language looked terrible. So, I mean, I swear, if Elias and Mitchell were both just as lauded as Stars and just as experienced, and you're picking one to drop, you'd actually drop Latrell based on that one performance.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, mate. It's and the same thing with Cody. Like, it's Cody's ability, I guess if you use the term ceiling, like his ceiling is much higher than what Lachlan Ilias's is. And like they've been hitting very similar KPIs, I guess you'd say. So, look, I obviously it's much harder for a team like the Bunnies to drop their out and out stars. And it's, yeah, like you said, it's scapegoat's not really the right word to use, but when you compare ability wise with where they should be playing, look at across the rest of their spine, Lachlan Ilias is the least of their concerns, I really would have thought. Whether or not it's the spark that they want from a halfback, and maybe that's why they've brought Dean Hawkins in this week, I'm not quite sure. I don't know how he plays. I haven't seen a lot of it much myself, but yeah, I don't know. Is he really going to provide a lot more than what Lachlan Ilias is at the moment? Like you said, he's statistics-wise, he's not making the mistakes. He's not necessarily the reason why they're losing. Maybe he's the reason they're not winning, but I don't think he's the reason why they're losing.
Yeah, and look, you have to always, to me, my question first is always, if you're going to drop someone, I'm fine with it, but who's replacing them? And when you're replacing a young half in Ilias with Dean Hawkins, then who's another young half who's inexperienced, then I'm not sure that's the answer. Now, if you had like a great replacement there that has a lot of experience or that was sort of neck and neck with that job, then it makes more sense, but they just don't. And again, I always look at expectations, like, and the general public, you know, and fans, like, we are too hard on players sometimes when they're young. Ilias hasn't been very good, but at the same time, what are our expectations for Ilias? Like, what does success look like for Lachlan Ilias? He's the fourth option in a four-man spine, you know, like, he's the fourth best player by mile, fourth.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's Latrell, Cody, Cook and Daylight and Ilias. So, I mean, if he's just a role player, you know, linchpinning that spine together, then really, you know, and you don't have a better option, that's not really going to fix things. So to me, it was a big Band-Aid fix. To me, there's a lot of problems with Demetrio that we've seen before. And I'm never going to drop Latrell Mitchell or Cody Walker, like, and I don't mean to sound like I would. Like, there's no way I would. They're better with those players in the side.
Yeah,
but you have to have accountability for it. And one of the things that I will give Cody a pass for is he's bloody 35 years old. Like, he was always going to drop off. They're actually fortunate he didn't drop off a cliff last year. If he drops off a cliff this year, it'll be unfortunate, but I wouldn't even really blame him for it because, I mean, he's 35. No one keeps going at that level forever. There's going to be a drop-off. And at that point, it's like, well, he's providing experience for them and, you know, a bit of guidance and stuff, but he can't do the things that he used to. And you saw that with a really bad mistake where he kind of butchered a try for AJ trying to do a more difficult pass than what it probably needed to be to get him the ball to score in a corner in that game. And, it puts more on Latrell Mitchell. And to me, Latrell really didn't step up there. And he's the one that probably needs to because he's the superstar in his prime with nothing holding him back at the moment and no excuses, whereas the other guys probably have them. The other guys that don't have excuses for South, which you saw in this, I feared for South Sydney's forward pack. I thought, you know, are these guys going to step up for the challenge against this Broncos pack that is led by Haas and Carrigan? And they didn't at all. And even their guys that are great, like Colin Matangi has been very quiet for maybe 6 months now. And also Murray has been largely ineffective. He only ran the ball 9 times in that game and played big minutes. And the other guys are basically all spot starters. None of them are stars or anything like that. They're just solid role players. So, I mean, if like the Broncos pack, you know, if the Broncos don't have Carrigan and Haas step up, they're mud. And the South pack's very much the same. They rely completely on Colin Matangi and Murray to give that pack quite a bit of spark, especially with Arrow not there either. And those guys just aren't doing it at all. So they got a lot of issues there. Like, I thought the pack and the spine are both big problems. And if you've got a problem with the pack and spine in a game, that's pretty hard to fix by the next week.
Yeah, there's not much left in the football team, is there?
We do need to move on and talk about some of the other games. I don't think there's much to talk about with the Sharks and the Bulldogs. Aside from the Dogs, I want to pose a question to you. They lost 25-6. I don't think the Sharks were quite at their best, but they were still decent. The Dogs, you know, led that game with the first try in the 13th minute and then never scored again. Do you think that the Dogs are being, I guess, unfairly criticised? Because, I mean, they weren't they haven't been a great side for many years. They've made some signings, but I mean, those signings take a bit of time. And losing to the Sharks, you know, that's not terrible. And when you look at Real Madrid, like going to Combank Stadium and losing to the Eels isn't terrible either. So certainly to me, the Dogs have got their issues, and you saw it in that 25-6 loss. But they haven't particularly played easy sides either, and they are going to take a bit of time with the new additions.
Yeah, the litmus test with the Dogs is really going to be when they start playing some of the teams that are there and thereabouts in relation to them on the table. So, look, it's probably too early to start throwing the axe at the Dogs, but I guess even the Sharks had their moments in the game where they didn't look real pretty either. They obviously got away with the points in the end and by a decent margin, but I think the Sharks were still not faultless, I guess you'd say. It's an interesting one. The Dogs have done plenty of recruiting, and they've got plenty of backroom staff changes and things like that that they've gone through over the last couple of seasons, bringing guys like Gus Gould heavily involved into the program now as well. You would like to think that they're probably starting from grassroots level and working their way up to try and build the system similar to what they've had at the Panthers for so long. It's obviously that seems to be the benchmark, the way that they run their program. So, look, I don't think the changes with the Dogs are going to happen overnight, but there seems to be enough there in the players that they've bought. I'm not really convinced, and like a lot of us in the podcasting group have talked about the role of all the utility players and things like that that they've purchased from last season to this season and how that's going to play with them. I mean, they've got Hutcho there at the moment playing as a halfback. They've got Salmon. Look, Toby Sexton's there and he can't get a game yet. So, look, it is really interesting. I don't know. I think they will get it together. How long it's going to take, Lord only knows.
Yeah, I'm willing to give the Dogs a couple of months, to be honest, to see what they look like because they've got a lot of moving parts here. I do think that Sexton is going to be the best half that they can have to pair with Burton. So I think that's a change I'd be making.
I agree.
But some of the other games, the Penrith Panthers defeated the Parramatta Eels 26-18 at Bluebet Stadium. This one always delivers. This was a really good game. And it was nice to get this after some of the other games that we got tossed up. I thought it was quite unfortunate for me. The highlight was really a low light. It was unfortunate for me that Mitchell Moses was still a bit lame. And I think that it's going to hurt the Eels until he's fully healthy. And hopefully it's this week with his groin. But certainly 26-18, the Eels, I think, put themselves in good stead for the competition again. They obviously missed the 8 last year, and I thought that they played pretty well. But it was a game as well that I felt like the Panthers really needed to win. Like, they start off slow quite often. They've obviously got the World Club Challenge and things. I tipped against them from round one, and I thought, wow, this is sort of not a danger game at all, really. It's not the right term. But if they go after this 0-2, then Drums are going to start to be beating, or, you know, the losses they've had, Crichton gone, different things and whatever. You know, Luai leaving, are the Panthers as strong? I just thought they really needed to win just to get their campaign on track to defend their title. And I thought they did it really, really well versus the Eels.
Yeah, look, at halftime, the Eels probably looked a better side initially. I think they went into halftime with an 18-16 lead from memory. And the Panthers piled on a couple of tries in the second half to keep Eels scoreless. But, yeah, look, as a whole, it was actually a really great game of footy to watch. I think both teams had their moments and chances to take the win, and the Panthers obviously got the chocolates in the end.
I just have to repeat Isaac Tungo's stats to highlight those because, boy, does he deserve it. He had a try. He had 6 line breaks, a try assist and 9 tackle breaks. He was absolutely outstanding and such a handful for Parramatta to handle. I did think that it was one of the bad things about Parramatta was, and like clearly Tungo just kept attacking, is that they ended up putting Talangi, you know, in that spot when Simonson got ruled out by HIA. Mm. And it's just, to me, it was, well, surely the next week you're going to have a proper utility and maybe Dejan Arshi is going to be on the bench. So that doesn't happen again because 6 line breaks by a centre is just unreal in this day and age. And they just got torn on that side. And again this week, the Parramatta Eels have gone in with no real, you know, care factor for if that happens again, who are they going to put in? They're basically named the same type of side. So, but Tango was outstanding, and it did expose a problem for the Eels and in modern day rugby league too, if you don't actually have a bit of flexibility in your team to move guys around with all the HIAs.
And the worst part is that the Eels don't seem to be short on decent outside backs. I mean, they've got like Russell, they've got there is a few guys in their reserve grade squad that have got NRL experience and have proven that they can play pretty well when they get given the opportunity. So I'm surprised that they haven't given some of those guys more of a crack, I guess, at this stage, or come up with some kind of alternative. Like you were saying, having Arcee sitting on the bench, maybe that would be the right play. But yeah, I don't know. They're just, is it stubbornness from Brad Arthur, or is there more at play there?
I think it is. Like, if he was an inexperienced coach, I'd say it's just inexperience, but he's not. He's a very experienced coach, so I would expect him to probably know a bit better. But I'm interested to see what their bench looks like come game day this week, because they do have an extended bench with a few guys in there that could help them out. So we'll see what happens there.
Going back on the Tuilagi being moved into the centre, like that, it just seemed like a bit of a strange change for me as well. I really thought they could have put Lane there or put Matto or somebody like that when Tango was definitely the issue, the attacking weapon that the Panthers had, and to keep going through that same door and not find a different way of closing it seemed really strange.
Yeah, well, I actually thought it was bizarre coaching not to use Hands. Like, Hands hardly played at all. He played like 5 minutes, and he's been a 5'8 in the past in his lower grade days. So, I mean, we've seen Dylan Brown move to centre before, and why don't you just move Dylan Brown to centre like you've done previously and put Hands, who has 5'8 experience, into 5'8? It just made too much sense, but they didn't do it, and I'm not an NRL coach, so maybe I'm an idiot, but it didn't make any sense to me either. The Raiders smashed the Tigers 32-12, and I'm sort of reserved on what to make of this one, because I didn't think the Raiders would be very good this year. They've won their first two games, and they've won them convincingly. The first was against a good side in Newcastle, or decent side, 28-12, and the second was 32-12, but it was smashing the Tigers at GIO. So I'm sort of reserving judgment on this one. I thought that the Raiders did some good things in this, but I thought that the Tigers also really allowed them to run up the points quite easily. And it might be the same sort of story with the Tigers. We only got to see the one game from them. That's their first hit out. Maybe it's not a great litmus test for them either. So I was a bit reserved judgment on both of these teams. How did you feel about the Raiders and the Tigers for round two?
Yeah, look, I agree, mate. I actually had the Raiders tip for down near the bottom, fighting it for the spoon, whereas that's certainly not the team that's turned up for these first two games. I mean, obviously, the Tigers haven't been much chop for a long time now, and they played the Knights in round one, and the Knights were arguably the most informed team of the competition in the second half of last season. So it's that was a bit of an interesting result, that one, and certainly not one that I tipped. Look, the Raiders forward pack are just, they're just phenomenal. And then the scariest part is they've got Whitehead coming back this week, and then they've got Big Horse probably the week after, I think, suspension finishes next week. So, I mean, the reinforcements that they've got coming back as well is really only going to make them stronger. You got a feel for the guys that are playing in the forward pack at the moment who are probably going to get dropped because it's obviously no fault of their own. But when you're bringing classy players back in, it's probably Ricky's generally a pick and stick kind of guy. So you'd like to think that their first graders from last year are just going to come straight back in, and some of the fringe players who've been playing really well will drop out of that squad, which is hard for them. But yeah, take what you get, I guess. As for the Tigers, look, obviously they had the bye in round one, which makes a bit of a difference to they're sort of a week behind the rest of the competition, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. I've got no doubt that they would have played somebody, whether as a reserve grade side or possibles, probables type thing that a lot of clubs do in the off-season. So, look, I'm sure they weren't underdone per se, but at NRL level, yeah, there's definitely a big step between New South Wales or Queensland Cup up to NRL. So, yeah, look, the Tigers, I think they've got enough young guys there that hopefully Benji can instill in them the type of work ethic and things like that they're trying to get out of NRL players these days. And hopefully it's on the up and up for Tigers, but, geez, it's hard. I mean, they've got the Sharks this week, and that could end up being a bloodbath, quite literally.
Yeah, I think one positive I'll give for Tigers fans is I think they've got a really good one in Galvin. I don't have that type of feeling about many players when I see him debut. He looks And it's such a cliche to say, so I'd loathe to say it, but he looks like a real footballer. Just a guy that knows how to play footy.
Yeah.
His build, he's, you know, tall and lanky. He reminds me a little bit, although a different game, of when they had Curtis Sirenen debut at six. He was a big six, and he just had really good hands and just a really good feel for the game, and he just looked the goods. I really, really like Galvin as a prospect. I thought he looked fantastic, and it does say something. They fast-tracked him into first grade to start at six, even though they had both halves available there in Sullivan and also Caesar, but he already looks like the best half they have. I think that's really exciting that they got young Galvin, and I'm looking forward to watching a bit more of him. But the Cowboys 21-20 over the Knights. So the Knights have started 0-2 here. They also copped an injury to Greg Marju's wrist, which is going to leave him out for at least 4 weeks. And all of a sudden, they're looking a little bit thin, a little bit shaky. And Kalen Ponga was, again, pretty disappointing in this one. He doesn't have hardly any attacking stats for the season as far as creating for others. Had a line break himself, but that was about it. It's a frustrating start for the Newcastle Knights. It's eerily similar to how they started last year. So you do start to see the questions on Adam O'Brien, because they seem to struggle to score points all of a sudden, when last year, by the midpoint of the season to the end of the season, they were scoring points at will. The Cowboys, much needed victory and a grinding one in the extra time. But yeah, I think all the questions out of this one on the Newcastle Knights and whether Ponga can actually reach the form that he was at last year. And if he doesn't, what's going to happen all around him? And we've already seen what's going to happen, and that's they've already dropped Hastings and they've rushed Brayley back in for round three. So some interesting times for Newcastle fans.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right, mate. It's they've swung the axe straight away on Hastings, and which is interesting because I think he's arguably one of their more attacking-minded players. They obviously got him back from Super League, and were pretty keen on him at first, and he played really well in the latter half of last season. So it is interesting. Look, all the talk is on Jack Cogger and how well he was playing for Panthers last year when Nathan Cleary was out. So, look, it's I guess it's a wait and see, and see what really eventuates out of the Knights, and see if the changes that they've made is going to make the difference that Adam O'Brien's hoping it does.
Yeah, I think it will make some difference. I do. Hastings has got a chronic foot injury or ankle injury, I can't remember which one, which a lot of people forget about, and he's only 28, but he's had a couple of surgeries on it already. Didn't train a lot at times during the season, and I think that's probably an issue for them with him. It's been said a few times, but it's something that I agree with. Like, Cogger's very good at just straightening up the attack and getting the ball to where it needs to be and doing it fast. And speed in rugby league isn't just about running fast. It's about moving the ball fast and making the right decisions quickly. And Cogger can do that. And that's going to help Ponga immensely. And it's also going to help some Newcastle too, because I don't think Newcastle, in the actual running sense and movement sense, are actually a fast team. Their forwards are pretty slow, and their outside backs aren't as fast as what you'd like to have them. And certainly losing Dom Young didn't help that. So they need guys that can, in the halves, that can move the ball quickly and make the right decisions, and also basically get the ball to Ponga and give him some space and time. And I think that Cog is going to be able to do that much better. So we'll wait and see how that one unfolds. The Storm 30-26 over the Warriors. I was not impressed by the Storm at all in the second half in particular, and I think that that was the story. The mistakes that they were making with the game on the line in the second half was very un-Storm-like, but I think that it's been brewing for a couple of years with them. We had Pappenhausen, and we had, like, Jerome Hughes played great. He's going to be out for a week now, which it was interesting that with the game on the line, playing at home, the Storm sort of started to fold a little bit under the pressure of the Warriors, but then the Warriors didn't take much advantage either. But what we did get was a try from Xavier Coates, where he's dived like 8 metres out, put the ball down over his head while he was entirely out of play. And it was just an amazing effort, and one that you didn't expect. Like, when I saw him get the ball, I didn't expect him to be able to score that. So already been lauded as the try, well, the best try in history by most. It's probably going to be unbeaten for the try of the season for sure. It was an amazing effort to win that match.
Yeah. Again, I guess it wasn't the prettiest game of football that we're going to see this season, but Storm just have that ability to get it done, don't they? Traditionally, they just They get the game. When the game's on the line, they just find that clutch play. They find a way to do things, and they've done that every year since I've been in the comp pretty much. Look, the try that he scored was just phenomenal with everything horizontal or probably further than horizontal, I guess you'd say. And even the way that he got the put down, look, it was unbelievable. Look, the look on the touch judge was sensational. She had her mouth wide open as he was diving for the ball. So, yeah, look, it was certainly a decent game of footy without it being phenomenal. The Warriors, yeah, I don't know. They had the opportunities to ice the game themselves and didn't quite get there. I think you can still see Sean Johnson has still got it, but I think Father Time is catching up with him. Mind you, I think we've been saying that for about four or five seasons now, and he just still seems to keep on keeping on. So, look, it's going to be interesting to see where both teams go from here. I think both teams will be in and around, well, certainly be in the eight. I'm not quite sure where they're going to fit. I guess the Storm have got the points on the board at the moment, but yeah, I don't know. Like they've still got players to come back. Obviously, Munster's got to come back. Nats is coming back this week through Queensland Cup with the Falcons, I believe. So he should be back next round. It won't be next round because they've got the bye. It'll be the round after. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Warriors have certainly got the attack. They're looking better than they did two or three seasons ago, but I'm not quite sure they're there just yet.
No, and I wouldn't be surprised if they actually miss the eight. Like, I think they'll make it, I guess, but I think that they're sort of in a group that they could end up missing out. And I don't think that we'll see the Sean Johnson of last year. And I think it's unfair for people to expect that. That's an outlier season for a guy in his 30s like he is towards the end of his career. He's gone through two rounds now without one attacking stat. And that's significant for someone that was near the top of the league in attacking stats and assists last year. So that's huge. And if you don't have him getting bulk attacking stats, setting up guys for tries, you're not going to be able to score enough points with that Warriors team or be enough of a threat. And I think the positive for them is their forward pack looks phenomenal again. Really like the pack. Capel's added some experience to it, which is nice. Fenua Blake's killing it still, which is great. But it's all for naught if you can't have your spine creating. And unfortunately, they've got CNK out for maybe another few weeks. And Metcalf is improving and looking quite good, but he's young and inexperienced. So a lot's on SJ's shoulders. And I just don't know whether he's going to be able to carry it this year for them like he did last year. The Roosters and the Seagulls. Seagulls win 21-14. Pretty dour contest. It was pretty heated at times as well. There was a lot of big hits. In particular, I think the turning point for me was a point in the second half with about 20 to go. Manly really muscled up and really put it on the Roosters physically, which I didn't expect because the Roosters have got a pretty dominant physical pack as well. The Manly side has a really big pack and they really dominated with their size, which I thought really turned the game around for them. They battered the Roosters for about 5 or 10 minutes there. So I thought it was quite a good game of footy. It was enjoyable. And I think that both sort of showed a bit. But the Roosters obviously didn't like what they saw from some of their forwards because they've made some changes this week as well with Wong out. And, you know, a lot of people have sort of questioned that. But I think, again, when we talk about young guys being dropped, it's not the end of the world. You know, Wong's got a lot to learn still. I think he's looked a bit tired at times after playing some minutes because he does do a lot and he isn't used to playing 80 minutes on an edge in first grade. He's been banged around a little bit. And he's made a couple of mistakes. Like, he had a really bad drop ball in kind of an attacking situation there where they could have had a line break, and he also made a couple of bad reads as well these first couple of rounds. So it makes sense to me, and I don't think it's bad. I think that Wong's going to have a really long first-grade career, but certainly the forwards for Manly won the battle last week, and I think that went a long way to winning the game for them.
Yeah, look, I agree. I think the hardest part with Sua Wong as well is that you've got Angus Crichton sitting in the wings, and you've got to be playing pretty good football to keep him out for too long. Like it was only 2 years ago or whatever it was that he was representing New South Wales and playing arguably as one of the best second row forwards in the game. So, look, he's if I saw it as only being a short-term type thing as well. I'm sure if he played well enough, he would have kept his spot, but then that would have given the coach plenty of headaches. They're bringing Nat Butcher back into the starting side this week as well to replace him, I think, and Angus onto the bench. I think that's how it was falling. But, yeah, look, it's I don't know. We said the same thing last year. The Roosters have the team on paper to win the comp and win by a long way. And for whatever reason, they're just not hitting it. So, look, I'm not quite sure. They've obviously May, who's come on the scene this season, is just he's absolutely killing it at front row. It looked like everything he touched turned to gold last week. So, look, he's certainly one to watch. And maybe that's it, mate. Maybe there's only so much room for some of the young up and comers in that squad. Now with Wirra Hargreaves back, does May sort of play second fiddle for a little bit? And do they just keep rotating these young guys through that squad? It will be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, as a Roosters fan, I was disappointed. I'm disappointed to lose any game. Like, I'm the worst person in the world for the hour after I lose a game. But I don't think that the Roosters look like they have in prior seasons. For one, they're not copying the early injuries that they've had in the last prior couple of seasons. But like, they could have won that, and I don't think they played terrible at all. And they played very well in Vegas in round one to get the win. So I'm fairly buoyed by that. And it's also a good point that you raise about the depth of the squad, particularly with the forwards. Like, I think that Robinson in the preseason actually was very honest and made mention of the fact that we can't keep starting slow like we have. I've taken responsibility for that, and we have to make sure we don't do it. So from that, I take that, you know, Robinson's always been a coach that's happy to give guys an opportunity when they earn it, which he did with Siwa Wong. You know, he thought that he earned the right to start, and he gave him that. But at the same time, when he's got those other options there that are experienced, he's not afraid to make those changes either. And that's what he's done. And I'll say for me, like, if I was to say who the best future edge back row is at the club, it would be Siwa Wong. But if you were to ask me who the best edge back row is right now to start, either side, it's Nat Butcher. And people forget that Nat Butcher made an Australian squad last year as well himself, because he was phenomenal last year. And he has been for a couple of years playing on the edge. So I was surprised that Nat actually lost the job. I think they're better off with him starting. I would prefer to have Wong on the bench, but it's hard to fit him. James Tedesco looks back to form to me, though. He's been phenomenal. He had a line breaker again on the weekend, and he's made a few in the first 2 weeks now and started creating and doing the sort of things that he was doing 2 years ago. He was a bit of a handful for Manly at times. And, you know, Sam Walker had an unhappy game, but I thought that he was pretty good in the first game, and he copped a knock in this one, and there's some good signs there with him there too. So, and look, you know, not to not give Manly any compliments, I feel great for Luke Brooks, and I think it was a great signing for Manly, and he's fit in perfectly for them, and he's exactly what they needed too, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Luke Brooks has been on fire this first part of the season, and like you said, maybe he's exactly what – maybe it's a change that was a mutual change that just worked really well for both parties. Like, Luke Brooks as a player, we're seeing stuff out of him now that we really haven't seen at the Tigers, and the consistency, I think. The game management and such, I think, is an area of his game now that we're going to see a lot more of at Manly. But obviously, he's the player that Manly needed as well. Once they let Kieran Foran go, they needed somebody to fill that void who's got the experience. And, mate, I can see Manly upsetting a few teams this year.
I can too, pending the normal caveat of Turbo not being injured again. The Dolphins 38 over the Dragons 0. We're not going to talk about this game. We're just going to move on. Both these teams have been flogged the first 2 weeks, and we need to see how each of them responds the next week, because the Dolphins, after getting flogged and then winning 38-0 against a poor side, and the Dragons, after playing well round one for the win and then getting flogged, what are they? Let's see what they do next game. So before we move along, we need to take a quick break to introduce you to a brand new partner of the NRL All-Stars podcast, Bonus Bank. You can go to www.bonusbank.com.au today to check them out. Sign up for free or go straight to a paid plan to access all the different benefits that Bonus Bank has. But basically, Bonus Bank is Australia's number one match betting website. So it's not gambling. It provides a profitable side hustle for anyone who likes their betting by taking advantage of promotions and bonus bets that you can make, giving you a risk-free, tax-free income every week. So Bonus Bank has software and calculators that do all the work for you. It's semi-automated, and it compares over 90 bookies across Australia as well to give you information on all in one place. It's also got its own app that you can do it on. It's also got several other features like betting and bonus calculators, tutorials and free education on how to make money from the bookies, Australia's biggest match betting Discord community you get to join as well, odds match software, full customer support, and a whole heap more. There's so many benefits, it's crazy. So if you want to compare offers and promos all in one place across bookies and learn how to make some extra income through the bookies in Australia, then Bonus Bank is well worth a try. Go and sign up today with a range of their plans. You can go completely free just to trial them, or you can go straight to a paid membership, and the different membership tiers will give you a whole heap of different features that are well worth it because, look, you get the money back anyway with the profits that you'll probably make. So sign up by referencing Allstars as your code on the site, and you'll get a special sign-up offer as well for a membership today. Bonusbank.com.au. Go get in there. Australia's number one side hustle for anyone who likes their betting. Moving along the run sheet, we did mention Latrell and the South Sydney Rabbitohs being in a bit of strife earlier when we were talking about the first game of the round in round two. The other thing that's happened and is very topical at the moment is Latrell's post-game interview with Triple M. I 100% stand by the outrage. I think that it is well and truly warranted. I think Latrell and South have brought it upon themselves. I do not care, to make it clear, if a player slips and swears in an interview, but most of the time they say sorry or they don't keep doing it. The problem that I have with what Latrell did is that there was a degree of arrogance and attitude with the manner that he did it, and his intent was there to continue to do it, and he did not care, which he specifically said. So for him to do it several times over, mention it, and then say, oh, look, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway, it really smacked of a lot of arrogance to me and an attitude that I don't think would be there if both the NRL and Souths had reined him in when he needed to be at different times. And we've seen time and time again that not happen. So I don't even blame Latrell 100% for it. Like, he's obviously going to take the bulk of the responsibility. But Souths and the NRL got a lot to answer for themselves, because you foster that type of attitude, you're encouraging that type of attitude. And not only that, you're building it to be worse and worse and worse and harder to actually break that trend of attitude that someone actually has if you're not going to actually pull it up. And I still don't think that they've pulled it up. And for Pappas to come out as a chair of the South Sydney Rabbitohs and turn around and say, oh, look, he obviously could have handled it better, but, you know, I'm sure Latrell, you know, believes that and he's sorry for the way that it went. I have not seen Latrell come out and say, I'm really sorry, I did the wrong thing. You know, and that's a real big deal about this. When we're talking about accountability, when someone does something wrong, Latrell is always happy to put his two cents in, as we saw with the Leno suspension, and that's fine. I'm not even going to comment on that. But you can't have it both ways. And unfortunately with Latrell, there's this petulant attitude that we keep seeing where he wants everything his way, but he doesn't want it to go the other way either. And it's kind of selfish. And you even see it with how he trains. You even see it with how he turns up sometimes. You even see it with his focus on his footy team. In that interview, it was very telling, which a lot of people picked up, that he had a smile about the fact that he got his 100th try or whatever. Like, why even bring up that milestone yourself? So there was a lot wrong with it. I'm not someone who's going to put him over coals forever, Timmy. I'm happy just to let it go. But to let it go, you actually need to see some accountability and some change. And we just have not seen that at all.
Mate, my opinion on this is it's much the same as yours, but, mate, it's pretty harsh. Look, I like him as a player on the footy field. I love what he can do to a game. But I think in so many ways, mate, he is absolute poison for the game. The arrogance that he shows is exactly what's wrong in society at the moment. I mean, with young people in general at the moment. Mate, I'm a high school teacher, as you know, and I deal with students all day long that think Latrell's an absolute god. We're a rugby league academy school up here in Brisbane, and a lot of the kids just think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I heard some comments in some of our chat groups and stuff that we're involved in, and some people were saying, oh, look, it was a Triple M interview at 10 o'clock at night. Why would there be school-age kids sitting up watching it? At the end of the day, mate, there is still school-age kids sitting up watching that game on a Thursday or a Friday night, because some of these kids live and breathe footy, and that's all they want to do. So there absolutely would have been kids watching it. The hard part then is for someone like a school teacher and for kids that live and breathe their footy and put guys like Latrell on such a pedestal, for him to physically stand there, and absolutely the guys behind the camera would have been saying to him, stop swearing, stop swearing, stop swearing. And he said, I don't care. And it was really blatant. And I've got no doubt that's exactly what was happening, because straight away it was like he was sort of answering a question to them when they would have been saying, stop swearing. And he said, I don't care, and then continued on with it. So, look, as far as I'm concerned, from a community perspective, from a school teacher perspective,
like it or lump it, that guy is at the top of the food chain in regards to the NRL and what persona he gives to young up-and-coming footballers and just kids in general coming through. The fact that he can say, I can stand here and say whatever I like, do whatever I like, I don't care. How many kids do you reckon went to school on Monday, might have had an issue with a teacher at school or a deputy principal or something along those lines, and they just basically said, get effed, I don't care, I'm going to do what I like. I think his behaviour is disgusting. I think it has been disgusting for such a long time now. And like you said, Souths and the NRL don't seem to be doing anything about it. He's definitely become a bit of a protected species. I don't know if then the NRL is concerned about if they come down on him, whether or not there's going to be like a racial debate or something like that, that they're just coming down on him because he's of Indigenous descent. Like, I can see all sorts of doors being opened from those sorts of arguments that aren't appropriate. But, I mean, somebody has to address it, mate, because he's getting away with blue murder at the moment, and the impact that he's having on young kids coming through, it's horrendous.
Well, like, he's a role model and he's also the face of the league. You have responsibility with that. And people will argue, well, you don't ask to do that or, you know, whatever. It's part and parcel of your job. And there's plenty of jobs where you have things that you have to live up to. Like, that's the other thing that I've got an issue with it as well. You're a professional. You're a professional athlete. You've done this before. You've had training in it. You're not a 19-year-old rookie either. Like, he's been in the league for the best part of a decade. Like, he's a professional. He should be an ultimate professional as far as athletes go. He knows exactly what he's doing and he's been trained on it. And when part of being a professional is you have to talk appropriately and professionally to your audience. And it's in all types of jobs. Like, could you imagine a doctor going up to a patient and swearing his head off and every second word's an F? It's never going to happen. Can you imagine a lawyer addressing a courtroom like that? Can you imagine a teacher addressing a classroom like that? What about a CEO going into a business meeting or a Zoom meeting, as we often have now, and, you know, started swearing their head off at their employees and stuff? What type of attitude does that foster? What type of image does that represent of your brand, of your job, of you as a professional, and as your company that you represent, which in this case is the NRL? It is poor, and it is below the expectations that you have in your role. And for most people, they're going to get reprimanded for that. And I'll bring up a couple of examples. We had a player a couple of years ago write a profanity on their arm, on their wristband. They didn't even say it. They got reprimanded for that. We had Paul Gallen fined $25,000 for dropping a C-bomb in a social media tweet. You know, he got reprimanded from that, I think, the last year of his career, like 4 or 5 years ago. It's not something that is not punished by the NRL. It often is. And this was a nice sit-down meeting where nothing really happened. So they've got to get harder on this. They've got to be more consistent. They've got to be fair. And for Latrell, like, I think it's pretty simple now. Mate, you've got no excuses. You are a leader. You're one of the best rugby league players in the world. A lot of people look up to you, not just the Indigenous kids, but all the kids and all the adults. Start to act up to it. Be professional and grow the...
Yes.
I was almost going to swear. Yeah. Grow up.
But it's a perfect example, Barnsley. Like I'm a school teacher. When I'm at the pub on a Friday night, I'm completely different to what I am in front of a year nine classroom on a Monday morning. I can swear as much as a dirty pub skank on a Friday evening, but you're in a professional role. And like, even with us doing the podcasting stuff, when we're all off air, the way that we speak and in our podcasting chat groups and things like that, the way we speak in there is different to how we have to be when we're on air and doing things professionally, like you keep saying. But it's he knew full well exactly what he was doing, and it was very blatant. He's the whole concept of I don't care. And then the hardest thing for me, mate, as well, coming back to the Indigenous racial type thing, the NRL put a really big hard stamp on the Spencer Lemieux issue last round in Vegas, and then they come back this time round. And I think it can probably damage the Indigenous brand as much from how they've dealt with Latrell as to the sort of the opposite way that they dealt with it a week ago. Like, I don't like either situations, don't get me wrong, and I don't think there's anywhere in the world where either situations is acceptable.
No. Look, Latrell has a lot to answer for at the moment. I hope that he actually matures as a footballer and as a representative of the NRL and an athlete. But I also, I put just as much emphasis on the NRL and Souths. They need to get their head out and actually start to read the room and start to do their job.
But sorry, mate, the last thing I will say as well is, like, the actual stats and figures and such don't look real good for Souths either. Like, they've lost, was it 13 of their last 15 games? And they just lost round two. And for him to walk off the field with that big smile on his face, and all he was concerned about was the fact that he'd scored 100 tries. Look at me, I'm so amazing. It was all about him, and it was nothing about his football team, and they've won two games in their last 15. Like, I couldn't understand why that wasn't a big issue for Souths.
Well, that's the other thing too. He's a leader of that team, and he's not acting like a leader at the moment, and that's a football issue that Souths have and that team has as well. That's our Spray of the Week. Now a positive pitch. Positive pitch segment is talking about something positive this week. Now, this is a guy that some people don't like very much as well, so I don't know how positive it's going to be. But Jared Weir-Hargreaves pulls up his 300th game. And look, whether you like him or you hate him, it doesn't matter. I just think that it's outstanding to have a front rower that plays like an old school front rower from 20, 30 years ago and is a bit of a throwback. To be able to play 16 seasons and pull up 300 games is a huge achievement. And he has had a massive career. You know, he's got a few premierships under his belt. He's represented New Zealand. He's got a few World Club challenges under his belt as well with the Roosters. Double that in minor premierships just about. He has been an outstanding front rower of the game for the last 16 years now. And he's not even slowing down. He's going to finish this year, but he's still playing at a really high standard and he's still starting. And the thing that, Tim, I think is just amazing with him bringing up his 300th game as well, he's obviously been suspended a lot too. Like, he could easily be at 350 games. And people talk about Cam Smith at 430 games, and for good reason. You know, that's a huge part of his legacy, is the fact that he managed to play the most games ever and stuff. But he was rarely suspended. He was rarely injured. And Jared is playing as a front rower, you know, and it's why I always credit Paul Gallen to getting to as many games as what he did. Like, when you're playing as a front rower and you're putting that through your body with that aggression and that sort of style that you play like Jared does, and you can get through all those games and you cop all the suspensions and stuff, like, it's pretty amazing. And I think that it's great. Like, I love that we've got guys like Jared still in the game, even though, like, some people will say, oh, look, he's dirty or he does this. Look, if you don't like him, you don't like him, but you've got to respect him. And I respect any front rower that plays the way that he does so he can get to 300 games.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more, mate. As you said, the amount of games that he's missed as well, he could easily be at 350 by now. Look, he is a stalwart. He's an old school front rower. Obviously, the game has changed in the 16 years or whatever since he started playing. But, mate, absolutely hats off to him. To put your body through that each and every week, or each and every second week in his case most often. But look, mate, love him or hate him, he's an amazing footballer. He's been an amazing footballer at the top of his game for so long. And my understanding is he's a really good bloke off the pitch as well. A lot of guys are keen to sit down and have a beer with him. He's got some really good stories. So, look, yeah, credit to him. 300 games in this day and age for a front rower, you've got to love that, or certainly respect it.
I met him a couple of times, and I've always said, like, he's such a nice guy. He really well-mannered, really. I'll tell you a story, real quick one, because we're running out of time. I went to the Roosters headquarters for a meeting, would have been a good 5-6 years ago, even more maybe, and I was in reception waiting, and Jared came out. And he went out of his way to say, g'day, how you going and stuff, even though I was just someone waiting in reception. It was really nice. And then he went and started chatting to the receptionist, who he obviously knows. And he dropped an F-bomb. This Maori woman that was sitting over opposite me with a dog came over, said something to him, and I looked up and she slapped him. And she said, don't you talk like that. And he said, sorry, mum. And then he went around to the receptionist he was talking to and specifically apologised for using that sort of language with her. And I just thought that was great. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, his mum's this, you know, pretty staunch Maori woman that was, you know, but, you know, Jared would have been 30 at the time, and she was so hard on him for not having manners when he was talking. And he actually apologised and everything. I just thought it was fantastic. And that was him in a tee. Like, he was so polite to talk to, such a good guy, and he had time for everyone. And someone else came in and sat next to me, and he came and said g'day to them as well. Yeah. Anyway, little tidbit about Jared that I remember. But we do have a legend rewind to finish off on, and it's a little bit of a somber one. Carl Webb, unfortunately, tragically, motor neuron disease took his life in January this year. We've got a couple of games that'll be dedicated to him because he did play for the Brisbane Broncos and the Cowboys, and both of them have said that their matchups will be dedicated to Carl Webb, and we'll get to see a lot of that this season. But it's a shame that he has passed. He also had a great rugby league career, though, so we need to talk about that. I remember him as a Brisbane Bronco more than a North Queensland Cowboy, but he played 66 games for the Broncos, debuting there, 115 for the Cows and 6 for Parramatta before he retired. He also played for the Queensland side, 15 games, and one game for Australia as well, and a couple for the Indigenous All-Stars. He's been 12 years retired. Obviously, he was crippled quite badly from the disease that he got, but in his playing days, he doesn't look that big on paper, mate. Like, you look at his stats and you go, oh, look, he's 6 foot, 108 kilos, but I just remember him being such a powerful, powerful man on the football field. The hits that he could put on and the power that he ran with, and he had one of the best stiff arms for a couple of years that I remember out of anyone. And when he debuted for Queensland as a youngster in 2001, he came off the bench and he had that absolutely barnstorming try that is now in all the highlight reels that you'll see of State of Origin, where he bumps off a couple of players, shoves them away and scores near the corner. And he's just elated that he scored it as well and so fired up. And he belted so many New South Welshmen that game as well. So, look, he's not as lauded or certainly didn't have as big a career as, you know, some of the guys that have played 30 tests for Australia and stuff. But he's still a great of the game. And with his passing in January, I was just thinking about someone to talk about. And I just kept coming back to Carl Webb because I've been thinking about what a powerful forward he was and how he had sort of a three-year peak where I think that he terrified everybody.
Yeah, look, he's in a lot of ways almost ahead of his time. His style of game was almost like what a modern-day 13 is. I think he did have some ball-playing ability, but just strong. Could certainly offload, ran the ball super hard, had the leg speed. He seemed to have everything in his game when he was in the peak of his prime. Look, when he came into the Broncos system, it was obviously only a really young guy, was still a teenager, and came in. He was playing for Dolby, I think, at the time in the Toowoomba area competition. Then signed on with the Toowoomba Clydesdales and made his debut then through that system into the Brisbane Broncos. So, look, he was just a one-of-a-kind kind of player. Not the biggest guy on the pitch, but geez, he was a worker. And you try and get him to give him a job, get him to do anything. He tackled really hard, ran the ball really hard, and yeah, like developed his offload at certain stages in his career. Look, I loved him as a player. He would absolutely fire up. I reckon he could probably fire up a grandmother. He was just a spark that was much needed in the Broncos. Obviously moved up north to the Cowboys and just kept playing the same way. It's a sad way that his career ended when it did. Obviously only getting the 6 games down with Parramatta, and then his health issues later on in his life. He's a big loss, absolutely, loss to the NRL community, and obviously all sympathies go out to his family and for what they had to deal with for the last few years of his life. But, mate, he was some football player, absolutely one of the best that we've seen. He comes through the Queensland systems, that's for sure.
Yeah, he was a very talented boxer in his younger days too, Golden Gloves boxer, I believe, and that could have been his calling as well. He could have been a multi-sport athlete just about if you're allowed to do both. But the other good thing about him is he wasn't a trainer in the sense that he was going to win beep tests and stuff. He never looked like the fittest guy in the world, but he's brute strength. He actually holds 2 Broncos records still. And one of them is the bench press record, which was 180 kilos, which he holds the record for still now after all these decades. So they've actually done that little plaque in the gym there, which I think is great. The Carl Webb one, which talks about those couple of records that he still has there. And the boys that talk about him, they've said at the Brisbane Broncos, you know, some of the older guys come in from the Broncos of old and talk about what a machine he was in the gym and how incredibly strong he was. And that's what I always remember about him. I'm certainly not going to remember, you know, the cruel disease that crippled him at the end. I remember him being one of the strongest forwards for at least a few years and certainly for the decade that we had in the competition. So rest in peace, Carl Webb. Great career and also a great life up until motor neuron disease, and condolences to his family. That is the first Talking Footy for 2024, Tim. We got it done. It's a great week this week for rugby league. There's a lot of good games in round 3. thank you very much for coming from the Supercoach Off the Bench podcast onto the All Stars podcast to talk footy with me. Really appreciate it, mate, as always.
No, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure to get to jump on again, mate. It's always good to talk footy with you, Barnsley. It's a great chat, and you guys run a great show here. If you're keen to keep an ear out for Supercoach Off the Bench, we do our podcast twice a week. We're on Facebook, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere where you get your podcasts. So, yeah, give us a listen and jump on and get involved.
Go check out the Off the Bench podcast for your Supercoach. They are great. For us, you can get us everywhere too, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud. Make sure you subscribe. You get all the episodes straight away as soon as they come out. We'll be back with another Supercoach episode next Tuesday night to drop on the Wednesday for TLT and another Talking Footy episode at the end of the week as well. Certainly make sure that you jump on Twitter as well, or X, I should say, bad habits, NRL_SC_AllStars is who you follow. And our three partners, we've got Picklebet, great betting partner of the All-Stars podcast. We've got One World Courier. If you've got any courier or shipping needs for your business or where you work, they are your people to go and talk to. And also Bonus Bank, bonusbank.com.au. Go jump on there if you want to beat the bookies. They've got great free memberships available now. But for all those, make sure that you use the code when you sign up, All-Stars, or one word, and they'll take great care of you and have some offers on sign-up as well. So until next week, enjoy round three of the footy. Thanks very much for listening. Can't wait to watch it all this weekend and talk all about it again with all you fine people next week.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on,